Welcome back to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm your host, Graham Richmond, and I'm joined by Alex Brown for a special bonus episode of the podcast in which we're going to break down this year's Wharton team-based discussion prompt and all that you need to do to find success in that exercise. Welcome back, Alex. How are things?
Very good, although it's a very rainy, dull day down in Cornwall.
Yes. Well, there are probably many of those every year, but so Alex, you know, we did agree to kind of get together and spend some extra time on Wharton's TBD for this season. And I think what we're going to do, like we did last year, is we're going to kind of flip-flop our roles, and you're going to ask the questions, and I'm going to provide some answers, and hopefully you'll add to them with great, insightful commentary, as you always do. But we just felt like, even though we have a podcast that we've recorded in the past, which talks all about how to deal with a team-based discussion specifically, we wanted to devote a special episode. We'll keep it short, really focused around, you know, this year's question to help people prepare for that aspect.
And just to reiterate, I would encourage people to also listen to the last year's podcast, where we went into a lot of detail on, in terms of just how to prepare and how to participate and behave in a team-based discussion. So we're not going to rehash a lot of that content today.
You can find any old episode of our podcast by just going to the Clear Admit website, clicking the chats and podcasts menu, and there's like a landing page for the podcast, and it has every episode we've ever recorded, which is actually often easier as a way to get to them than, say, iTunes, where they tend to just show the most recent. So if you're looking for an old episode, whether it's the Wharton interview or anything we've done in the past, that's a great way to get there. But yeah, we'll try not to rehash too much of the basic stuff for TBD. We'll do a little, but it's mostly going to be focused on this year's question and how unique it is.
Very good. Well, Graham, let's start off by having you tell us what that question is, although I assume most of our audience already knows.
So this year's prompt is about a new building that Wharton's unveiling. And I'll just read our listeners the prompt briefly here. And it says, entrepreneurship and innovation are at the forefront of Wharton's focus for the future of the school. Last year, the University of Pennsylvania announced a $25 million gift that'll spearhead construction of a transformative new building. Tangen Hall, which is this new building, is the first ever dedicated space for Penn Wharton entrepreneurship and other student entrepreneurship programs across the university. Here, students will incubate ideas to transform business. Completion of the new 70,000 square foot facility is set for the fall of 2020. And that's exactly when our listeners are going to be heading off to school. So they have great timing in that respect. And then the second part of the Wharton TBD prompt reads, for the purpose of this discussion, you've been invited to be a part of a team of students tasked with creating a one-day program that promotes the unveiling of Tangen Hall and Wharton's focus on entrepreneurship and innovation. As a team, determine and define your target audience and invitation count. Identify and select a keynote speaker and programming for the day. Include one interactive workshop and metrics for success. Provide unique experiential opportunities that highlight the depth and breadth of resources within Tangen Hall. So that's the question. That's the thing that everyone who's going to go to the TBD has been given, and they're supposed to read it. And what do they do next, Alex? What do you think of this question? And then we'll kind of get into what they're supposed to do with it.
Yeah, as listeners of the prior podcast will know, I wasn't a huge fan of the TBD in years past, but I've grown to recognize and understand why they use it. But as I've done that, I was a bit floored by this prompt, to be perfectly honest. But nevertheless, so this is a prompt that everybody has to deal with, so that's fine. A question for you right at the beginning, though, Graham. That first sentence, can you read that to me again?
Yeah, it says, entrepreneurship and innovation are at the forefront of Wharton's focus for the future of the school.
So I find that very interesting because, and we've talked about this before, well, what if you're going to Wharton for finance or for consulting or for tech or for healthcare or for whatever? How does this relate to your experience at Wharton if you're going for, you know, for something like finance or consulting? Do you see how entrepreneurship and innovation cuts across all industries and all sort of majors and focus? I think that's what Wharton's trying to tell us. Is that correct?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, I think they would argue that if you're going into any domain, you know, that innovation is always, you know, critical to stay ahead of competition. And in fact, one great example is this new building, Tangen Hall, and we'll get into more of it later, but it actually, it's going to house something called the Stevens Center for Innovation and Finance, which is currently, you know, housed elsewhere on campus. But so they, so I think they would argue that no matter what you're doing, whether it's finance or, you know, healthcare, that, that entrepreneurship and innovation, or at least entrepreneurial thinking and innovation, are pretty vital. So this isn't just the school saying we want, you know, everyone who comes here to start a business or something. I think it's much deeper than that.
Yeah. And I think it's sort of, again, it has to now be in the DNA of a business school graduate, no matter what type of business, for-profit, non-profit, social impact that you're going into, you need to have that sort of innovation and sort of entrepreneurial sort of mindset to affect change within the organizations you plan to participate. That's my take on this prompt, the initial part of this prompt, Graham. And I think you can also, if you look at the history of Wharton and Joseph Wharton himself, you know, you can look at this sort of culture of entrepreneurship and innovation, I think, throughout its history. Would you say that's fair?
I think that's fair. What's interesting to me, and this is maybe a little bit of a sidebar, but we're known to get off on these tangents. I think one of the things that I was sort of pondering is, does Wharton, if you think of the very top schools, does Wharton shout entrepreneurship to the average candidate? I know you and I worked there. I did my MBA there. Like, we know that entrepreneurship is actually quite strong at Wharton and traditionally has been. But I think for most candidates, if you were to just take a quick survey, it could be that they think of schools like Stanford or MIT or even Harvard before they might mention Wharton as kind of entrepreneurial powerhouse, right? So I wonder if some of that's at play here too. Is Wharton kind of trying to make sure they're positioning their brand accordingly, and or just doing a better job of showcasing their efforts in this domain to help build awareness?
In essence, another marketing exercise through the interview process.
Yes.
But yes, so very good. So let me ask you the first question. When you read this prompt, how do candidates do their research and learn with respect to answering this question?
Yeah, this is challenging. And I, you know, because frankly, I set out as I read the prompt and was preparing for this podcast, I started to think about what would I do, you know, if I were a student. So the first thing I did, and I think this is, you know, good advice, is I went to the press release that Wharton issued about the building. It's readily, you know, just type in whatever Tangen Hall Wharton and it'll come up in Google, right? So go to the press release. Don't read the P&Q or the Clear Admit article. Just go to the source, you know, like find what they have to say about this building. And, you know, frankly, I found it to be pretty informative. And so I would say the first thing that anyone should do is learn about this new building. Now, you made a great point when we were first kind of getting set up to record this episode that you think people might want to even go before they do that. They may want to just better understand kind of entrepreneurship and innovation at Wharton writ large, like just do some digging on that too.
And at Penn at large, I suppose.
Yeah. One of the things that's most fascinating to me is that this building, it's not just a Wharton building. It's really a Penn building designed to bring together folks from all, I think there are 12 graduate schools or 12 schools within the university. And so they're really trying to get, whether it's engineering or design or business, like they want to bring all these folks together. So this isn't just a Wharton effort, although if you look at who's going to be residing in the building, it is, you know, it's pretty Wharton heavy, but it's a university-wide initiative.
But there's a good point though, Graham. I think as a candidate going into this interview, the candidate needs to know how many graduate schools. They shouldn't be going in thinking, well, I think there's 6 or 7 or 10 or 12, and maybe they'll be using this building. This prompt, I believe, offers a tremendous amount of opportunity to do a lot of upfront research. One, to look at the, you know, the Wharton press release, to see the sort of purpose of Tangen Hall, to also look at all the Wharton resources dedicated currently to entrepreneurship, and the plans for those to sort of mesh with this particular facility, as well as to know all the graduate schools that have some strand of entrepreneurship and the cross-pollinization efforts that are going on between graduate schools and so on and so forth. And maybe also Wharton undergrad is taking advantage of Tangent Hall. I don't know, but the candidate going into this interview needs to absolutely know all the minutiae, I believe, in terms of preparing for this interview. That doesn't mean to say that all this detail goes into your one-minute prompt that you have at the beginning, right? But when you get into the conversations afterwards and you become a cheerleader for someone else's idea or whatever it might be, you need to back up your point of view with real substance. And Wharton, I think, with this year's prompt, is giving you lots of opportunity to identify that substance.
Yes. Now, I know that the admissions team would say don't spend more than a few hours, you know, thinking about this stuff and doing your research. And that's probably about right. I mean, I think if you were to spend a couple hours just reading and getting up to speed, making some notes, you probably could arrive at a really nice level of preparation. One of the things I did after I read that press release is I wanted to make sure I understood the purpose of the building. And in the press release, it actually says the purpose of the building is to foster entrepreneurship and innovation across all schools at Penn. It's stated very clearly, right? So I think that goes to your point that, like, you better know how many schools is that and who might be using it. I also then tried to set out to understand, like, what would be in this building, because I know I'm an entrepreneur, ClearAdmit is a small, startup type company, but I'm not, super well versed in everything entrepreneurship. And so I wanted to kind of better understand, like, what is a incubator innovation facility typically have in it? And I kind of found, they're going to have, all kinds of crazy stuff, like a test kitchen for people who are pursuing food related ventures. They're going to have pop-up retail spaces on the ground floor so that if you have an idea for a product you're going to sell, you could literally open up a shop and sell it in Philadelphia. They're going to have a virtual reality environment, a 3D printing space, a 3D laser cutting thing. They're going to have maker spaces to sort of produce products. They're going to have co-working, collaboration spaces. And, so that's just sort of the types of spaces. They're also going to have a lot of existing entities at Penn and Wharton that are going to be housed in this facility. So I actually studied entrepreneurial management when I was at Wharton, and it looks like the, the Snyder Entrepreneurial Research Center and the Georgian Entrepreneurial Management Program, those are moving into this building. There's a bunch of things moving into this building that I encourage people to look into. There's going to be a venture lab. There's some non-Wharton stuff that's going to be in the building. Like, I guess there's an integrated product design master's program that the school offers, which is a design, engineering, and business kind of combo degree. So that program is going to be housed in this building. So there are all these different things that are going to come together under this one roof. And I would just, I just set out as I was kind of thinking about the prompt to better understand that. And a lot of that's in the article that they released. Yeah.
Yeah. But I do think that's what candidates need to do before they try to answer the individual questions that the prompt specifically does ask. They obviously need to know the overall purpose, the resources that are currently available, and what areas are going to take advantage of this building and this facility and so forth. So I think that's made you do a lot of research. That's very good, Graham. Well done for doing that. So why don't you sort of go through some of the prompts that they absolutely need to answer?
Yeah. So once you've done this kind of background homework, my philosophy is that you should take the prompt, which is really the second piece of the TBD. It's kind of a two paragraph assignment. And the second paragraph gets into the details of what they want from you. And so it sounds like, some of the basic questions are, you've got to build this one day kind of unveiling program for the building. And, there's some very fundamental questions they're asking you, like, who are you inviting? And, what kind of programming would you have? They did give you some...
And even how many people are you inviting? I thought that was quite odd for such specificity, whatever that word is.
How many people who... And actually, let's pause on that for a second, because I started to think about that. And I was like, well, obviously... The guys who gave the money, they need to come. but then it gets complicated, right? I mean, what's the purpose of the unveiling? Is it to get like the campus community excited about it? Is it to get the media excited and to have them write lots of articles about Wharton's role in entrepreneurship and, you know, build the brand of the school in that space? Is it, you know, is it to get, I don't know, local politicians excited about, you know, Philly and the schools, you know, so there's all kinds of angles you could go, angles you could take. Yeah.
And answering that question also then helps identify the specific programming that you include for the day, right?
Exactly. And one of the things that was surprising to me when I read the TBD prompt and compared it back to the school's press release, what's interesting to me is that the TBD prompt is very focused on Wharton and the business school and the business school's kind of use of this space to some extent. But the press release about the building is much more about, you know, the university at large is, you know, use of the space. And Wharton's obviously prominently mentioned there. But I think if I were, you know, I could see a person coming to the TBD having not thought to invite other Penn people, you know, to this. You know, they might be like, well, we'll invite all the Wharton faculty and entrepreneurship. We'll invite the donors, a couple of politicians, the media, and boom, you know. But they need more than that, I think. You know, there's the engineering school, design, probably life sciences. I mean, there's a lot of different people at Penn who are going to be involved and who probably should be present. So yeah, lots to think about in terms of the guest list. And, you know, so that was the first thing I thought is, you know, they're asking you who you're going to invite. So you got to figure that out and how many people. The second thing they say is, you know, what are you going to do in the 1 day program? And they give you some requirements, though, like you have to have a keynote speaker. There has to be at least one interactive workshop. And then there should be kind of experiential offerings, that's a quote, that demonstrate the depth and breadth of resources in the building. So I guess, you know, maybe that's people get to tour, maybe they're kind of concurrent tours of the building happening or, you know, at different times a day and people get to, you know, see what a 3D printer can do or see, you know, and this actually brought me to another question that I had for you, which is like, when do you think they should do the unveiling? That's not asked, you know, TBD prompt does not say like, when should this happen? But it got me thinking as to, you know, it may not be enough for the building to be finished and open. I sort of wondered what you thought about that, because obviously the building will be really different within a month or two of opening and once they're kind of students inhabiting the spaces and faculty and maybe products being produced or, you know, designed or whatever. So what's your take on that?
No, I think it's a very good point. And I, quite honestly, I think if I was planning for something like this, I would want the space to be lived in and alive and breathing before I had the big unveiling. So, yeah, maybe sometime through that fall semester rather than in the summer or right at the very beginning of the semester.
Now, I may be a victim of my age and having lived through the dot-com bubble bursting. I was actually at Wharton when that all happened. And one of the things that was fascinating to me were the number of kind of incubators that had opened in Philly and really everywhere. All these kind of cool, funky spaces where people were going to start businesses. And, you know, it was really sexy at the time. But now I think there is in some corners of the business community a certain amount of cynicism with this stuff because they've kind of seen it before. And I think we've evolved. I mean, this is obviously a different type of venture than a straight up, you know, incubator. But I think for that reason, being able to allow, you know, those politicians or media folks who've been around the block and seen some of this stuff before to see a building that's actually, you know, lived in, like you said, and is actively creating things and is vibrant and, you know, kind of innovative, I think that would go a long way, in my mind at least. So figuring out the programming, I don't, you know, obviously there are no right answers here. I think everyone will have a point of view and, you know, again, your goal, maybe we should have mentioned this earlier, but your goal is to come up with a 1 minute pitch for how you want to structure this day, who you're going to invite, how many, all these different things and what kind of programming you'll have. So you only have like a minute. So you're not going to dive super deep, but you need more information and a greater kind of stronger point of view to have it kind of for the conversation that ensues in the TBD.
Well, one of the interesting questions, Graham, was what are your metrics for success for something like this?
Yeah, that was fascinating too. So I think, and now the more I think about this, the more I think about how do you do this in a minute? Like how in 1 minute or so can you say, here's how I program the day, here's what I invite, and here's how I'm going to measure success. I mean, it's a lot, but it's what they've asked for. So I don't know. I mean, measuring success could be done so many different ways. I mean, it could be just, what percentage of graduates of Penn end up being entrepreneurs, you know, or it could be something, you know, what kind of media coverage does the school get for the event, or do students applying for the fall of 2021 suddenly reference, you know, Tangent Hall and you know, are kind of keenly aware of it? Or maybe a metric for success is just attendance, like how many people show up from the people you've invited. Or, I mean, there's so many ways to think of it.
Or media mentioned, but to be clear, we're talking about metrics of success for this programming in this day rather than the long-term health of this new space.
Yeah, so I think maybe another thing could be cross-campus awareness of kind of Wharton and you know, it just sort of like, if this is supposed to be a, like you said earlier, a kind of cross-pollinator, you know, of sorts, making sure that, like, when you go, I don't know, maybe you do some survey work after the event and see if people over in the life sciences corner of the school know about this thing, you know, like, did it actually spread the word in some way? But there are a lot of ways, yeah.
If someone noted that they'd, for their keynote speaker, they'd identified Elon Musk, what would your reaction be if you're in that team-based discussion?
Wow. Well, he is a Penn grad, right? I believe. So there is that connection.
I think he's Wharton undergrad, wasn't he?
Either Penn or Wharton, I can't remember. But he's definitely a Penn person. So, I mean, he's, you know, he's fair game. I think, you know, he may... I don't know what the budget is for the unveiling, because he probably has a high speaking fee, but maybe, you know, maybe because he's an alum, he'd do it. I have no idea. I mean, he's kind of a buzzword kind of person. I mean, he's the first person that would come to many people's mind if you're looking for a person to speak on innovation at an event like this. I mean, I don't know. I'm not going to get too out on a limb here. I think, you know, he's a kind of an obvious choice, I guess. Doesn't rattle me or anything. I'm not so sure he's the, it's sort of like, would he come, and is it sort of, I don't know. What made you think of him? Because he's an alum, or because you think he's a great ambassador for this type of stuff?
Because he's an alum and his ambition in life is ridiculously out of this world, literally. And, you know, obviously he's shown some amazing feats of success because of that ambition. But you are asked to select a keynote speaker. So who would you select, Graham?
Oh no, you put me on the spot. Yeah, that is a good question. Obviously, I had thought of Elon Musk. You think of, like, you know, I mean, anyone who's got a reputation for innovation, whether it's Bill Gates or, you know, Tim Cook. I also think that it'd be interesting to find someone has a reputation for innovation, but maybe at the kind of intersection of a few different spaces. So I think, you know, you are right with Elon Musk in that there's automotive, there's the energy sector, there's space exploration. So there's a lot happening there. The other thing I want to be careful of is, you know, it's easy to think of, like, just business leaders, and this building is not just for the business school. So I'd want to try to think out of the box a little bit. I mean, maybe there's, I don't read a ton of nonfiction, so you might be better positioned, but there's got to be someone who's written someone who's kind of a guru on innovation and entrepreneurship, and who's maybe a noted author in the space, or even a really engaging speaker, maybe even a Wharton faculty member or something. I don't know.
Do you not think it needs to be an alum of Penn and or Wharton more specifically? Or do you think it's fair game to get someone from outside of the Penn community?
That's fair. Yeah, I think it'd be safer from a PR standpoint and a branding standpoint to have a Wharton alum or a Penn alum or a current faculty member.
And frankly, there needs to be, there must be through the robust and vast alumni networks of Penn and Wharton, there must be some great candidates to uncover for this.
Sure. I mean, the CEO of Google is a Wharton grad as well, right? So yeah, there are a lot of angles that one could pursue. But yeah, they do have to pick a keynote. They also have to think up these kind of interactive workshops or experiential. So I don't know. I mean, I think some of this stuff could be as, you know, as simple as if there's a food startup in the space, maybe there's like a come and bake what we're making, you know, kind of thing, or, you know, kind of really getting people, giving them a chance to get their hands dirty. Or to, you know, get firsthand exposure to how a 3D printer works, or, you know, it could be anything, even some kind of team, you know, team events in some of these co-working spaces that they're going to have. Or so there are a lot of things people could plan.
I mean, I think the point is now we're getting to this point sort of in a general sense is this getting ready for this team-based discussion is not going to be a trivial exercise. There are some specific questions that absolutely need answering. And for many candidates that will be approaching this team-based discussion, it will require them to do a pretty considerable amount of research to answer these questions. So from that perspective, I just think they really do need to prepare quite well, even though you're only expected to present a one-minute prompt. You've got to back that prompt up with a lot of sort of research and data to be feel good about it. And then when you're listening to your classmates' prompts or your fellow team-based discussion participants' prompts, you need to be able to have conversation and dialogue afterwards based on those other prompts. So that does require a lot of background going in, I think.
Yeah. So, and a couple of thoughts. I mean, for those listening, I mean, I think everyone's aware of this, but basically, you know, you read the prompt, you spend your time preparing, and then you go into the TBD, and there's going to be you and four or five others in this discussion, and each of you gets a minute to go over your thoughts, your plan for the day in this case. And then the debate ensues, and you have about 30 minutes or so after that to kind of have a debate and work as a team to come up with a plan for the unveiling. And that plan, you know, is probably going to include elements of everyone's ideas or maybe some new ideas that come out of discussion and such. But yeah, just so everyone understands that. One last thing I wanted to say about this keynote speaker, since like literally it sounds like there's no way around not picking someone in terms of like when you go in with your 1 minute, you've got to have a person. And the only thing I would say is this reminds me a lot of some of the essay questions that schools or even interview questions that schools have employed historically, where they say like, who's a leader you admire, or, you know, three people you'd want to have dinner with, or, you know, that sort of thing, where you've got to come up with someone. Except here, obviously, it's a very specific task. They're going to be, you know, keynote for the unveiling of a very specific type of building. So it narrows the field a bit. But the only thing I would say is, frankly, if I'm an admissions observer watching the TBD, I'm probably going to get pretty sick of the, you know, kind of, oh, I'd have Tim Cook or Elon Musk or, you know, like the standard fare, the same way that when we would read essays in the past or go to do interviews, if someone said, oh, you know, well, it's Gandhi or it's JFK or, you know, the kind of standard stuff, that can get old, you know, the Michael Jordan or whatever it might be. So I always encourage people to try to think a little outside of the box or at least go, you know, one layer deeper than the kind of obvious choices, just if anything, to be show some originality. But that's a sidebar. I don't know if you agree with that.
No, I completely agree. And I also think, just to sort of wrap it all around, in order to answer these individual questions, whether it's to identify the keynote speaker, come up with the metrics, who you're inviting, what's the invitation count, and so on and so forth, you have to start with what is the overall overarching goal of this day and then back everything up from that. So whoever you invite needs to be in sync with the type of audience you're trying to appeal to, and then sort of make sure that it all meshes well with the interactive workshops that you're including, and other programming that you're asked to include, and so on and so forth. So these are not discrete questions, and I know candidates applying to Wharton readily understand this, but it bears mentioning. You weren't asked for a goal necessarily, but you were asked for metrics of success, so you could marry it into that piece of it. But what is the goal, and then back everything up from that.
Yeah, and presumably the goal is somewhat related to, you know, the purpose of the building, at least, you know, obviously you're not going to accomplish everything that the building's setting out to accomplish in one unveiling event, but I think it should be in sync with that. Yeah, so there's lots to think about here. There's a lot of great, I mean, at least, I mean, one of the things that's kind of interesting is I don't recall. I know previous TBDs have been a bit more, as you said, before we jumped on to record, you were talking about how some of the previous prompts have been a bit more open-ended, you know, plan the retreat that happens post-preterm, you know, like for students. And the other thing I thought that was kind of interesting was that everyone does a retreat. So last year's prompt was you're planning the post orientation retreat where people get to really know their fellow classmates and stuff. And so everyone goes through that. It is possible that not every student at Wharton will spend a lot of time in Tangen Hall. You know, I mean, it's possible, right? So I think this is a bit more of a niche thing, but with very specific assignments, like you're picking a keynote, you're deciding how many people to invite and who, and, you know, and I would say it's maybe not even enough to say, well, we'll invite the media. Well, like who? Which media outlets would you want to be influencing or have cover this? So it gets, yeah, there's a lot here. And I'll be curious to hear, you know, when I chat with Wharton admissions folks as the year goes on, how it goes, you know, because I think it's always a roll of the dice with a new prompt.
Yeah, and reading the Wharton interview reports to get the perspective of the candidates, because, again, I think this is more challenging than their more typical, more open-ended responses that requires some really specific research ahead of time, so to get that background information. And so forth. So I wish everyone the best of luck. And not that we're necessarily wrapping up now, but if we are, I just want to make sure again that it's clear that our previous podcast on the Wharton team-based discussion goes a lot more in detail in terms of how to behave sort of during the team-based discussion, so on and so forth, things that we haven't really talked about today. So definitely worth the extra sort of 30 minutes to listen to the certainly the beginning of that podcast too, Graham, right?
Yeah, in fact, I would argue that that stuff's almost more important. I mean, you got to go in prepared, but invariably, like after the opening where everyone presents their point of view, it turns into a discussion and, you know, understanding the right tactics to, you know, deploy in a team discussion and what to look out for and how to handle certain situations. If you have a kind of, you know, difficult team member or whatever it might be, or a shy team member, we touch on all of that in the other podcast. So people should listen to that. The last thing I was going to say is once you've kind of thought about the question for this year and broken it down into all these subcomponents and come up with your response, you've got to work that into a 1-minute summary and you've got to maybe practice that. So I would advise, you know, that maybe get a friend and make your 1-minute pitch and see what they think. Because if you have never, you know, you might have a lot of notes and ideas, but if you've never really tried to say it in a minute and your first time doing that is in the group, that could backfire. So I think practicing, but not to the point where you feel like a robot rehearsing their lines when you get into the TBD, but I think you need to at least know what you want to say in that minute and get it organized. You're not going to read from notes, you know, in the TBD. Ideally, you're just able to kind of articulate this stuff. And yeah, so be ready to deliver it to your fellow TBD members. And I would also argue that spending some time brainstorming additional ideas. So you may have your plan A of how you'd run it, but you might have other ideas that come to you along the way that get sort of dropped by the wayside when it comes to narrowing into a 1-minute summary. And I would hang on to those ideas for purposes of, you know, adding color and further commentary in the rest of the 30-minute TBD after you've given your pitch.
I think that's great advice, Graham.
So I think we promised we'd be brief. We kind of were brief, although you and I love to chat about this stuff. So, but I think we've kind of really tackled this year's prompt. Any other advice that you have other than listening to the broader podcast we did on TBD ground rules in general?
Yeah, I mean, I just think, again, this team-based discussion question does require a good amount of sort of preparation, which wasn't necessarily the case in prior team-based discussions, although some preparation is always useful. I do think in this case, a good deal of research and preparation up front will serve you well in this team-based discussion. I do wish everybody the best of luck. Again, I've become more of a cheerleader for this type of interviewing as I read more of the interview reports and really understand the perception of the candidates going through this process. And yeah, just wish everybody the best of luck. And once you've been through this team-based discussion, it would be terrific if you did submit as an interview report, sort of pay it forward to some of the other candidates coming through.
Yeah, and I'll second that. I really wish everyone the best of luck. If you've got a Wharton TBD, I know it's unorthodox in terms of the other types of interviews you've been having with other schools, but it's not rocket science. And, you know, again, the advice we've given and the advice in our interview archive are all great starting points that should make you feel much more kind of comfortable going into it. So best of luck to everyone. And thanks again for rating and reviewing this podcast whenever you can. It really helps us. And it helps us to produce these bonus episodes, which I know so many of you rely on. So thanks again, everyone. We'll be back soon with another episode.